Well, this morning I'd like to begin my message with an invitation for you to join me to travel back in time. Thinking we'll go back to when I was in grade school, maybe third or fourth grade. We're in the classroom, and my teacher is at the front, and she has just called for our undivided attention. Now, we love our teacher, and we wanted to cooperate. I know I did. But the problem is, just a couple of desks to my left was Billy, and he has just pulled a face. And then beyond him are the windows that afford a view of the playing fields. And it's easy to start imagining a game of ball or tag. And then that morning, I overslept, so I didn't have breakfast, and this is the last lesson before lunchtime, and my tummy is grumbling. I may want to give my teacher my undivided attention, but I can't. There are too many distractions. Perhaps you have been in this story, and if not as a child, then as an adult. We live in a world that is filled with all sorts of things clamoring for our attention. We try to make a virtue of our inability to focus on any one thing by saying that we're adept at multitasking. All too many of us, and I include myself in this category, allow ourselves to be distracted by our smartphones, keeping an eye out for text messages and emails about important things that are happening somewhere, all too often to the exclusion of what is going on where we are. Indeed, even this moment, this hour, as I am preaching to you, I like to be fully focused on all of you. But I notice the joys and concerns folder sitting here, and I want to pick it up and move it out of the way because it's in my field of vision. Giving our undivided attention is hard work. But if we want to be disciples, it is absolutely vital that we do so. In this morning's lesson from Luke, we have three potential followers of Jesus appear. Now imagine a pastor today, a welcoming committee at this church, greeting potential disciples or members the way Jesus did these three folks who came up to him. There's that first person. Volunteers. In the church, we love to see people show up and volunteer. And what does Jesus do? Well, he starts complaining, or so it seems, about the fact that foxes and birds have a place to stay, but not Jesus. Nowhere to lay his weary head. And then Jesus sees a potential disciple and he recruits him. The man's response is, okay, but I have to go bury my father first. No. Jesus says, the dead will bury the dead. You have to go and proclaim the kingdom. And then, even after these two rejections take place, another guy shows up wanting to follow Jesus. But he wants to say goodbye to his family first. And Jesus starts talking about farming. What's going on here? What is Jesus doing, and why is he doing it this way? Well, I believe in each of these instances, Jesus is trying to claim, not request, not ask for, but to claim the undivided attention of those who would be his disciples. And so in the first instance, he tells this potential companion, if you're worried about where you're going to live or what kind of house you're going to have, If you think about your possessions and your stuff, you might want to think twice before becoming one of my disciples. To the second, he says something incredibly difficult. And he does this in a society that even more than ours put a premium on mourning and care for the dead. And Jesus said, as important as your familial relationships are, God must be at the center of your life. And to the third, well, at first blush there, it seems like he might be offering more words about family, but he's saying something different when he starts to talk about plowing and looking forward and not looking back. Jesus is saying that before you can only be the kingdom. Don't look back to your own priorities, your own prejudices, your own ideologies, your own whatevers that have shaped your views. You need to look forward at one thing and one thing only. Undivided attention is what Jesus claims here. I think the reason he does it in such absolutist terms is that he knows how hard it is for us to give our attention. If he doesn't ask for everything, Jesus is smart enough, though he may get nothing. And he does it with such urgency because he knows his story is going to be reaching a critical juncture. Today's lesson marks the beginning of what are known in academic circles as the travel discourses. Jesus has set his face towards Jerusalem. He is now heading towards his rendezvous with the cross. Time is of the essence. Time cannot be wasted. He has work to do. And he wants us to join him in doing it. But Jesus will not sugarcoat the challenges and the difficulties of being a disciple. Now, just before Jesus has this encounter with these three potential disciples, we have this interesting episode in Samaria. Jesus and James and John come to share the word. And this is a big deal because you may remember that the Samaritans and the Jews did not get along. They had very different ideas about worship and about God. But Jesus wasn't going to let that be an obstacle. He was going to share the good news with these folks. And to their credit, James and John were willing to go along and do it too. It looked like they're beginning to get Jesus' preaching and teaching and what he's all about. But the Samaritans make very clear they're not interested in offering any hospitality. They're just like the people in Jesus' hometown, who also said thanks, but no thanks. Well, James and John are outraged. They take umbrage at the fact that their teacher, their friend, has been disrespected, and so they ask if they can call down fire from heaven. These guys are channeling Elijah. Immediately before today's lesson, we have the story of the Transfiguration. Jesus at the top of the mountain with Moses and Elijah. And there is the story of Elijah calling down the fire to consume the prophets of Baal. Maybe they're going back even further. Maybe they're thinking back to the conflagration that consumed Sodom and Gomorrah when the locals there refused to offer hospitality to visitors. Jesus, though, is having none of it. A few verses before the Transfiguration, he had told them, his followers. That if you go somewhere and people refuse you hospitality, leave and wipe the dust off your sandals. Don't pick a fight. Don't get consumed. Don't nurse your grudges. Move to the future. Now, of course, Jesus and the disciples did not live in chapters and verses, but we'll use that construct to our advantage here. Jesus' teaching about wiping dust from one's sandals comes at the beginning of chapter 9. Here we are at the end of the chapter, a short little space of time. And the disciples clearly didn't get it. This is why Jesus is demanding our undivided attention. He needs us to focus on what he's saying, and he knows it's hard for us sometimes to do that. Now imagine what would have happened if Jesus had said to James and John, okay, let's call down some fire. Let's just wipe out these people. Do you think word of that would have gotten around pretty quickly? Do you think a lot of people would have started following Jesus? I think so. They would have been scared not to. And in that counter history, we learn something about who Jesus really is. Jesus is not one who tries to force things on us. Jesus does not want to coerce us. Jesus invites us. He never bullies. He never threatens. He opens the door and encourages our participation. But have no doubts that the life into which Jesus invites us is anything but demanding. Jesus wants his followers to put God at the very center of their lives. And that can be easier said than done. But here's the good news. Jesus knows we're probably going to fail. But he still invites us anyway. Jesus knows we're going to mess up. And yet he still encourages us to try. Jesus knows that each and every one of us, just like those first disciples, is fallible and flawed, imperfect. And yet we are the ones that Jesus has called to build the kingdom. We are the ones that Jesus has entrusted with the vital work of sharing God's good news. You and me. God help us. And he will. Jesus will push. Jesus will challenge. And Jesus will make claims on us. All he's going to ask for are our hearts and our minds and our souls. But think about what we are being offered in exchange. New life. The opportunity to be filled with and shaped by and driven forward by God's Spirit. The opportunity to actually help bring about the New Jerusalem. And I'll offer the example that I've offered before. If you want to see what it looks like, come back here for the community dinner today. There you will see the kingdom of God unfolding. So yes, Jesus asks a lot of us. In fact, Jesus asks everything of us. But consider what Jesus has given to you and to me. Consider what God has given to the world. And then I think it is perfectly reasonable for us to try to give in return our undivided attention.